You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Today's sponsor is Sonos. Sonos is offering the listeners of Mr. Robot 10% off one order of $2,500 or less for any product on Sonos.com. This offer is available for a limited time only and cannot be combined with other discounts or promotions. Use the promo code ROBOT10, that's capital ROBOT10, at Sonos.com to receive this offer.
Every day we change the world. But to change the world in a way that means anything, it's slow, it's methodical.
Welcome to 2-Bit Encryption, the officially unofficial podcast for Mr. Robot on USA. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
Did you forget your name?
I did.
We're here to talk about Season 3, Episode 7, titled Episode 3.6 _ Frederick plus Tanya dot CHK. I neglected to look up what a CHK file is. However, I found out that Frederick plus Tanya is a little-known exploit in the Microsoft website. No, that's not true. It's the code names for Mobley and Trenton. Mobley and Trenton, in case you didn't know.
Interesting.
Which could not have been more relevant than this episode. We haven't seen them in almost a full season, about 7 episodes, and they're back.
Yeah.
With
for
the outcome that we all thought, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of people were speculating, oh, Leon's not going to kill him. But
right.
I was on the kill him train. But it didn't happen exactly the way I expected.
Right. No,
because Leon didn't get him.
Yeah, they were just kept in the plot fridge to be used until the next time.
Yeah.
And it's
a pretty good effect, I thought.
Yeah, and there's this kind of horrifying... Like existential dread of, like, you know, that you're not really in control of your life and you're just like a pawn in someone's game. And, like, literally they were. Because, like, throughout this whole episode, I firmly believe that they're going to survive and rejoin the cast. Like, they're going to reassemble the Justice League or whatever. They're going
right.
to, after flinging apart, you're going to get the Fellowship back together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, like, it was pretty clear to me. As soon as that scene, the final scene ended up, the what was going to happen, because the SWAT team was coming in at night. You could see the sunlight pouring in through the garage
yeah.
windows. Like, I see what's going on now.
Yep. As soon as they sat him down at the computers and they were like, hey, this is an exploit or whatever.
Right, but it's like, yeah. you know, I just felt so bad for them because they're going to die for a reason they didn't fully understand.
Yeah, and a cause they don't believe in.
And a cause they don't believe in to these, like, semi-spiritual cult goon kind of guys. Like, it must have, that's a real fucking trip, man.
Uh-huh. And it's so ridiculous to me that he's talking about the self-sacrifice, right?
Right.
Because, sure, this is a cause he believes in, but he's not the one making the sacrifice.
Right.
Maybe
right.
talk about their sacrifice.
Yeah, no, it was chilling and inhuman. So what have you talked about, like, what you thought of this episode? Just like, you liked it?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
I liked the beginning. I liked the end, but their middle, like, I'm not sure how I think about this new Angela who's regressed to the mind of a 6-year-old. Like,
okay.
I don't know whether they're like, I'm open to the idea of they're playing around with her having multiple fragmented personalities as well. But none of Elliot's personas are fucking annoying. And this persona of Angela's is, I find, very fucking annoying and
interesting
and childlike and stupid. And I don't buy it. It might be where they're taking me, but I do not like this turn for this character.
Okay. This is the first time that I really thought Portia was given something interesting to do.
Act like
someone who has had a mental break and just cannot cope with the consequences of her own actions. And I think that's what this whole episode is about, is the consequences of these people's actions.
Yeah.
Like, and Tyrell, Angela, Elliot, everyone.
I felt like, yeah, I get that they were trying to portray her mental state as fraying, but I found that this is like the opposite of interesting. This was very fucking tropey. Like really, this is like a stock clip art performance of someone losing their mind. And I've seen this like 2 to 3 dozen times in entertainment, and like, you gotta do something different or something particular well, and I don't feel like they did a very good job. And also, I rediscovered Tyrell's my kryptonite this episode.
Well, let's stay on Angela, because I feel like maybe I have been bored so goddamn stiff by her for the past season and a half that anything, literally anything, give me anything else but your goddamn cardboard performance, and I will bow down and say it's great.
You perform that you prefer this configuration. And it's also, we're in just complete violent disagreement over her being boring this last season and a half.
Sure, yeah.
But like, Tyrell's the other part in the episode where I just realized, like, oh, right, you're not a real person I can identify with. So I don't feel anything about it. In fact, I kind of feel thrilled for Santiago, which I didn't think would ever happen. love the beginning, love the end. The middle with Angela and Tyrell is rough for me. It's rough for me. Everyone calm down. I still love the show. I think the season is on a very positive trajectory. Mm-hmm. I just got to be real about those two things really significantly drawing my enjoyment of the episode down in the middle.
Oh, I'm sure you'll get some emails.
Vociferously
I'm just defensive emails.
Take it in the spirit it's given. It's like, yeah. I didn't like the spice the S-mail put in this particular stew.
All right. Well, I'm more of a fan.
That Tyrell stock might have been bad to begin with. Maybe we shouldn't have thrown that in the soup.
I mean, he's not punching bums anymore. That's good. That's a step in the right direction.
There again.
At least he's grieving his...
There's a lot of ways you can depict a man having his entire world destroyed. A good 30 seconds of a man looking like he's battling constipation. Not one of those acting choices I would have made. But okay. I don't know.
Maybe we'll talk more about it when we get there in the recap. But yeah, I guess I just disagree. On pretty much everything, which
is
fine.
This is going to be an interesting. This is going to be an interesting podcast.
Well, that's the nature of subjective opinion, I suppose.
Before we get to the main part of the episode, I want to talk about a little housekeeping. Happy Black Friday, Americans! Go out and consume. Go out and consume. Spend your Bitcoins and your E-coins and your silver coins out at the tills.
Or don't.
That's what's happening.
Or save them.
As far as Bald Move is concerned, we've got this weekend coming up, a live watch of The Walking Dead. We'll have a Walking Dead podcast out next week, along with the Mr. Robot podcast. Be doing lunch. But I will say that the public output is going to start to decrease on Bald Move, because December, we always have a yearly like Christmas type of celebration where we do a bunch of club features and do a lot of fun things for club members. So... if you want to not be left out through the dead of winter, maybe check out the club. Ooh, stealth club ad, club.baldmove.com. Here in the housekeeping. House has been kept. Okay, so let's move on.
Okay, are we ready to get to the recap?
Yeah.
All right, we start off with Trenton and Mobley being held in a house by Leon and forced to listen to him bag on Frasier and praise Knight Rider. He's not going to kill him, though, is what he says.
Frasier? Yeah, that'd be a mistake.
I don't know. I mean, I'm with Leon about Frasier, but not for the same reasons. I don't think it's unbelievable that a Seattle radio host would have more butt than an ashtray,
yeah,
as he says. But
Kelsey Grammer can slay.
Sure, it. I just don't like the show.
Yeah, we and it's so funny because we just talked about this 2 days ago, or was it over Thanksgiving? We're like, yeah,
it might have been both, to
yeah,
be honest.
Yeah, because one of our buddies from Seattle, Natch, is really into Frasier, and we're like, I love Cheers, I don't know, Frasier, never acquired that taste for it.
I'm a Seinfeld guy, though.
Probably going to get a lot of emails about that. Knight Rider, yeah. Huge fan of Knight Rider.
Yeah.
OG Knight Rider fan right here.
And Knight Rider actually got an Emmy nomination? Is that true?
I don't know, because I didn't pay attention to Emmys when I was running around in my underoos. But he's right. He's right. They should have gotten an Emmy for that dope-ass theme song.
They should have,
Knight Rider and Airwolf. Like, you're going to give something to Miami Vice, and you're not going to recognize Knight Rider? Knight Rider's theme. And, like, as soon as he took that long drag on the marijuana cigarette, I knew they're going to hit us with a theme.
Yep.
And that he was going to drive off into the sunset as the theme climax. And I'll be damned if they didn't do it. And is this Albuquerque?
Oh, I don't know.
If not, like, I feel like this scene of him driving into the desert and all this desert stuff is so Breaking Bad, it, like, really made me happy and nostalgic.
Yeah, and it's super Knight Rider, too. If you go and watch the intro, it's Knight Rider driving through, Michael Knight driving through the desert.
Sure, yeah.
With Kit saying some shit and some narrator telling us how important it all is.
Talking about him walking in a shadowy world of...
I thought...
And
you got similar overhead shots.
I thought it was great, and it was good to get away from the Mr. Robot palette every once in a while.
You can only do one Alf episode.
Yeah, these episodes, it's just like there's like, you know, it's a, they're out there for a compelling reason, and the set and setting looks gorgeous, and I liked it. I really liked it.
And I thought the foreshadowing, I guess it would be, of the 71 bombed buildings playing on the TV here. You don't quite understand exactly how it connects to Mobley and Trenton. Mobley and Trenton?
It's Mobley. Don't start this shit again.
I don't remember is the problem. I don't remember
which
one. Welcome
to my world. It's so weird that this, like, the one instance that's so crystal in my mind is the one that's slippery for you. Like,
Frederick
what are the fucking
Tanya.
Odds? What are the fucking odds?
Frederick and Tanya are their names from now on.
Right.
The foreshadowing of showing that on the TV while they're sitting there,
yeah,
I thought was pretty nice.
Do you know why Leon's keychain said "World's Sexiest Grandpa"?
I didn't even see it.
Are we supposed to understand it that Caddy is actually Mobley's roommate, who was someone's grandfather? Top Dab, which if you're just joining us, is the scale of weird socioeconomic things in this show that doesn't quite match up to my expectations and drives me crazy. This whole neighborhood is kind of Top Dabby because it looks like a wealthy, you know, Albuquerque or Phoenix kind of neighborhood. And there's like just odd piles of trash and weird, like the way they show economic upheaval is like a couple of for sale signs and that, and the fact that maybe this grandpa that's unrelated to either of these guys would be subletting a room out to the two. And, like, I didn't understand the precise relationship of Mobley and this guy because he's, like, my roommate.
Uh-huh.
And he looked like, when I looked at him dead on the floor, he didn't look like he was old enough to be a grandpa.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Maybe Leon's traveled through time 4 or 5 times and he's the world's sexiest grandpa.
Fuck, man, I didn't even see the keychain, so.
Also, like, I feel like, you know, we talked about how some of the dialogue in the last episode was Quentin Tarantino-esque, and he goes to just straight up biting Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
I wonder if that world's sexiest grandpa was supposed to call back the pussy wagon.
Okay.
Like, it's just flashy and catchy, and he's like, oh, well, since I'm biting Tarantino, might as well give him some homage, yeah.
Sure. I also get the impression that this... I got a very, like... Angela season 2 being taken to the house vibe from this whole thing. Like, this is something that they just have houses in the suburbs.
That's good. Yeah.
Like,
good
set up too. To do these sort of things.
Right. Right.
So we go back to Elliot from last episode, and he's discovering the E-Corp attack. He is completely rocked by it. So he goes to see Krista, and Elliot can't tell Krista what he's done. So Mr. Robot comes out and does it for him. And Krista doesn't believe him at first, but she's eventually convinced that Mr. Robot, like, actually instigated all this after he connects some dots for her.
I liked how many pig and pearl-based metaphors he just debauched.
Yeah.
You're all lined up in troughs for your sugar-coated pearls of semen.
Yeah.
Ah!
It's evocative, we'll say that.
Yes, it is very evocative. It's got the salty and the sweet, you know? It's like a...
For sure.
It's pigs prefer the flavor. Two great tastes in one.
This scene looks and sounds fantastic.
Yeah. Like
that transformation from Elliot to Mr. Robot is, I'm going to say it, Emmy worthy. Like, so much of this show has been in the last few episodes, but that is so good.
Dude, when I saw it, I instantly had this intuition that, like, there's a lot of theories based on the fact that her office has changed to kind of explain that, like, this is we're still not dealing with a real person or a real situation. This is some kind of crazy jail scenario in Elliot's mind. But I honestly think they switched to sets just so they could pull off this completely amazing and badass transition of, like, the single bookcase shadowing his, like, transformation into Mr. Hyde. Yeah. Like, I don't think, yeah, like, I'm pretty...
And he's dissociating at that point. You can't even say it's real, you
yeah,
know?
But they pull, like, I think that set is somehow... Well, I mean, it'd be easy enough to stitch it together, but...
Sure.
Like, I feel like that set could pull, like, the bookcases can pull apart so they can get those isolation scenes and do a fancy camera move, and now it's all back to...
Yeah.
It's cool, though.
It's super cool.
Very Kubrickian.
What do you think about this job of convincing Krista? Was it convincing that she would be convinced?
I think when he says do the math and starts talking about all those coincidences, that's a step above your average kook in an office.
Yeah, and he connects it to her personally,
right,
which I felt was powerful.
Right.
Look, this is a guy who had access at the time the 5-9 hack attack happened, yeah, and then he hacked you.
Yeah.
Like, think about it from your own perspective here.
Yeah, but I also thought, like, they do a really good job of playing both sides of a lot of angles here. Like, when she later has a conversation with her lawyer, it's like, well, you realize that it, like, everything he's saying is true. Like, there are probably a lot of kooks taking advantage, and they're probably very persuasive. And are you going to be, like, you're essentially asking her, like, are you going to be the hero that risks their reputation on the 1% chance that this is a real thing?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to be the 99 people to lose their practice for nothing? Or
yeah,
are you going to be the one person interviewed being like, yeah, he was telling me all this crazy shit, but, you know, the law says the law. And then you're a villain. You're
yeah,
kind of like, well, you should have done the heroic thing. Mm-hmm. It's a hell of a psychological prison to be in.
Yeah. She's in a tough spot for sure. Another person in a tough spot is Dom. Dom and Santiago, her boss, are watching the latest F Society video claiming that there's going to be another attack in 24 hours. Sensing the desperate situation the FBI is in, Tyrell's lawyer tries to get him a deal in exchange for information about the people who held him captive, that he says held him captive. This is all part of the plan. After the meeting with the lawyer, Dom's irate
can
about...
Can we have a time out and talk about the logic of this? This lawyer, nothing that he says matters because what Tyrell is doing and is going to do has been preordained by the Dark Army already, right?
Uh-huh.
And Santiago's in on it, too. So this is just all theater for Dom? Am I to understand that? But what's weird is because Tyrell's a player on the stage, too, because he also doesn't have imperfect information, or he has imperfect information.
He does, yeah. But as far as I can tell, he's still following the plan.
Right. So
I
imagine his lawyer is in on it in as much as he was hired by some kind of Dark Army goon. Or
I don't think they'd leave that to chance.
Yeah.
If his lawyer says, no, you need to plead guilty.
Right.
And
you need dude, this is looking bad for you. It's,
or do you need to take this to the Supreme Court? We got a solid case here. No.
Yeah, I think so. So it's like it's so weird to like this is a compelling scene, but it's like this weird scene within a scene that like the only intended audience is Dom.
Yeah.
To get... And it works really well because when Santiago is later arguing about like what to do with Tyrell to Dom, like again, it's amazing how much of that shit actually sounds like just a bureaucrat trying to cover their ass. Like he wants to shine, but boy, he really doesn't want a crater.
And he always has like a sliver of plausibility
yes,
in it too, because I believe that if he comes to them with flimsy bullshit,
yeah,
and he doesn't have the goods and he's not telling them the information they want to hear, they're going to ignore him.
Right.
And that's no good for anybody.
And he also knows the next play. He
right,
knows that they're going to find the mm-hmm, real masterminds, and they're going to be in the middle of an airport hacked that would have killed God knows how many people, and he's going to be able to go back to Dom and say, see, you play cautious, you play it straight, you wait for... And he's going to be fucking right. It's really it's really amazing.
Yeah. I mean, this whole thing... after the meeting with the lawyer, Dom, she's super irate about how... Like, obviously, they're being played,
right,
and how oblivious Santiago seems to be, but he beats his chest and tells her to get back in line. And he does that because he's pushing forward the narrative. He's pushing forward the
yes,
plan. And if she rightfully gets her way here,
yep,
and they start bringing in other leads, the information is not going to add up, and there's going to be more to pursue here.
Right.
Some loose ends. So...
Yeah,
he's just pushing it down the road.
Like, right now, her gut is just screaming that this is wrong,
yeah,
and it's going to lead to her eventually uncovering. But, like, if she cared, like, 1% less, I feel like this works.
Yeah.
That's, like, when she says at the end, like, you're going to get away with this, because I don't know officially what she can do to pursue a cold case against a case that's been closed.
Yeah. And especially when her boss is saying
going
no.
to be actively sitting on it and say, go fuck yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, she's in a tough spot too. So Angela's watching the news about E-Corp and she's wondering aloud to Darlene about whether the people who died will be okay, which is pretty confusing to Darlene. So Darlene leaves to get her shit, telling Angela not to go anywhere.
Why does she leave to get her shit?
I don't know. I think she's going to stay with Angela, but she doesn't have her shit. I don't know, man.
I guess so. You got to get shit eventually.
Yeah.
You got to get it all together.
Then we go to Tyrell looking through a book of faces to ID his F Society captors, and he's requesting once again to see his family. Not a lot to say there. We do see Elliot in that book, and he obviously doesn't point out Elliot.
There's obviously Trenton and Mobley, who he's going right. to put his big greasy finger on and smear it and say that's the one.
Yep. And then I think Dom's partner's in there. No, it's some just generic random dude.
Santiago's in the first page. Oh, shit, that shouldn't be in there. Let me get that out of there.
We had him on Polygraph at the time, and boy, he spiked when he saw your face. I don't know why. So Santiago's on the phone with his mom, who has apparently told her doctor that he warned her about the attack before it happened, I think.
She's canceling on her doctor. So you're getting the idea that maybe White Rose is controlling him through his mother stricken with cancer? Like, she came down with aggressive stage 4 White Rose, and the only treatment is to betray your country and work for a foreign national. That seems like her MO, right? Like, she's got a treatment that she needs. She's got something that needs 2 more treatments. Mm-hmm. It sounds like she's chemo. And that means, like, every single person that's connected to White Rose has also had some cancer in their background.
So she's calling her doctor to cancel the appointment.
Because she doesn't want to go out because this guy's got her scared because of the attacks.
Yeah.
And now he's trying to fear that he put in her. He's trying to get out so she'll go and do her chemo.
Yeah, right. And I also get the impression that she told the doctor about. Like,
yes.
The excuse she gave for canceling is...
there's an attack coming, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and my boy warned me about it before it happened.
Yeah. ASAC Santiago, my boy.
Right. You know him. He's on the TV. So then the guy who interrogated Tyrell comes in with the faces he ID'd. We don't get to see them here, but he also says that Tyrell wants to see his family. So Santiago goes to see Tyrell, and he tells him that his wife is dead and his child is in foster care, and if he blows Santiago's cover, he'll make it his mission to make a terrible life for Tyrell's child.
That's a terrible threat, because part of blowing his cover would make him not be in a position to... I guess his threat is, like, you will try to blow my cover, it won't work, and then I'll destroy your life.
Right. Because he's not nearly as credible as the director of the FBI, right?
Right.
Or whoever Santiago is.
Right.
So
I mean, my big problem with this scene is that Tyrell is not recognizably human to me, mm-hmm. so I don't know what he's thinking. And then the actor, for some reason, chooses to just portray a man losing the battle with constipation as a way.
He is, but it's like, emotional constipation.
I don't know how he really feels about his wife and what.
Think about how long it's been since he's fought a bum. This man is emotionally constipated to the max.
Yeah, all that pile of wood is
there are blockages that no enema can cure, man.
Sure, he's got the hobo fight blocked up inside of him.
Yeah.
I think it's awful. I think this is awful. I think this character is terrible.
The way this scene is filmed, it really salvages it for me. Like, if I was going to say, okay, well, I don't believe this character, but... The filming of this scene is so good. That shot through the door where it's just him in isolation. We don't hear him. We can only see him reacting. Like, I think it's great.
It's the same thing with, like, Morpheus breaking out of a change in the first Matrix where
his face just turns
into
jello.
Like, Lawrence Fishburne just goes for fucking broke and there's not a person on set that says dial it back. And, like, every right. single time I see it, yeah, I can't believe
it's not CG.
Because it's like, it's the opposite. Tyrell's doing constipation. He's doing Amanda just realizes he's got 10 seconds to get to the toilet because the brown tide is rushing in. And they're both just like such bizarre, curious choices to show extremes of emotion. And Tyrell, I don't even like. And I think he's a fucking, like, does he love his wife? Does he love his son? Is his son just a fucking collection of genes ordained? I don't know. He's so fucking imperious and weird and cruel. I don't understand him.
Okay.
So like, if you want me to start understanding him, I start needing...
It might be too late for you, yeah. Honestly. Like, I know you never bought him from the beginning, so...
He might be my Angela. If you're saying to Angela going goo goo gaga is an interesting direction for her to take, she's really lost to you, for sure.
The other thing I really like about this scene is you can tell that Santiago got played, too. He was not privy to this part of the plan in much the same way that Mr. Robot or Tyrell weren't.
Yes.
It wasn't supposed to be 71 E-Corp buildings.
But he's also enjoying sticking this guy with this brutal information.
But yeah, he's definitely pissed.
Yeah.
We go back to Leon out in the desert. He's taking Frederick and Tanya out there, and he begins digging a grave while they're tied up in the car. Tanya says she sent an email to go out to, quote unquote, someone she trusts in the event that she can't get back to her computer. She manages to untie herself and tries to drive the car away, but crashes it into a boulder. This was the least believable part of the episode for me. This was rough.
Don't make me defend it, Jim.
This fucking boulder scene, man.
Well, first of all, I don't understand S-mails. Like, one of my big bugaboos, if you've listened to me for years and years, is crazy tonal shifts. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to believe this fat, sweaty nerd is literally thinking he is this crazy person is digging a grave for him in the desert. And he's making J-date jokes.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. And, like, it's fine to, like, I also felt like biting Tarantino. I don't know if it's because just last week I was like, hey, he's not at Tarantino's house yet, but he's in the neighborhood as far as some of this dialogue. Like, that really made me wrinkle my face up. Like, I didn't like the whole, I'm Sam Kinison.
Really? I liked it.
I mean, that's Samuel Jackson scooping brains out of a probably Cadillac.
Mushroom cloud laying motherfucker.
Yeah, like that's literally biting, but you just change the cultural references. I don't know how I felt about that.
Okay.
Especially since the character, again, is he scared? Is he is the way he deals with stress uncontrollably making sitcom jokes and pop culture references? I don't know.
Leon just got in his head.
But I thought, like, the least unbelievable part is the fact that a person who's never driven a car before, who's given the keys to this large, powerful, heavy, rear-wheel drive car and is told to floor it in the desert, would overcorrect into, like, a fucking boulder. That seemed like it made a lot. It's dumb and it's stupid, but she told him she'd never driven before and he tells her to floor it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an automatic. It's not that hard. Like, if you had made this a manual transmission,
floored that car in that desert, it would, and you have never like corrected for counter steer,
not
with
a lot of traction,
heavy ass rear wheel driven car. I think that's like entirely possible.
Here's what would have worked way better in my opinion: make it a manual car and make her just stall it repeatedly, and Leon just walks up next to him
and be like, hey,
taps on the window, what the fuck are you doing?
You're destroying a transmission or something.
Right.
Yeah, agreed.
That's no way to treat a caddy. Like,
agreed.
They could have done this better and more believably, in my opinion.
Yeah. Like I said, I've made excuses for it, but I wish I didn't have to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this scene,
and
not
also Leon,
the greatest.
Leon is so fucking calm about this. I get it. He's blazed out of his mind.
Yeah.
But
I think that's that excuses everything.
What happens when they get away and he has to go to White Rose and say, yeah,
they got away?
He probably
gets executed.
Right?
I mean, honestly.
But
he probably
is so chill about it.
Yeah. Well, it's meant to be, man.
Yeah.
He just rewinds it. He'll just rewind it.
Right. Yeah, we'll talk about the rewinding.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, it seems like everyone that works for White Rose believes in that to some extent.
Believes in the term undo, but what that actually
means
to them,
person,
I'm not
sure.
Right,
but I think of Leon. He's like, that's one of the reasons. Like, he manifests his undo button in a very different way than the rest of the Dark Army goons do.
I guess so.
But I buy it.
I can erase these brain cells, no problem.
That's right. I'm rolling back time right now. Right. One puff at a time.
The other thing is there's another Shining reference in this scene where he says, that Sam Kinison thing.
Yeah,
and then he says, Shelley Duvall in the Overlook Hotel.
Right.
Pretty good. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're trying to say anything with it other than just another reference. So Krista goes to her lawyer, I think, to ask if she should turn in Elliot for the E-Corp attacks. She really thinks he's involved, but her lawyer says it's very likely that he's just another faker.
That's excellent advice.
Yeah.
That's what's great. Like, this is advice you want your attorney to give. It's also completely wrong for the situation.
Yeah, and I wonder if she's going to follow it, dude. I really don't know.
That's a great... Yeah, I don't know either, because on the one hand, she did... No, that was her ex-boyfriend that handed Elliot over to the police.
Yeah, she's made some bad decisions, like... If she is, in fact, meeting with him in her house.
I think what's going to happen is the federal government coming around and saying all clear is going to make her think she's being silly. But she's also going to hear Mr. Robot saying, oh, you're just going to suck down these sugar-coated pearls of semen. And she's going to have that nagging doubt.
Okay.
She feels like this is going to like come to a head in the finale.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is a long pot that's been boiling ever since her first interview with Mr. Robot.
Yeah. And I don't know who she takes this to other than, like, the local PD or call the FBI with an anonymous tip.
There's some sort of armed psychiatrist association where, you know, they're like an FBI or U.S. Marshals equivalent. U.S. psychos. And there's like five of them sitting at a just raised desk she's got to go before.
Make a case.
And they're like, all right, psychiatrists, mount up. And they, you know, get a bunch of drugs and shit and
that's come after him. Season finale.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I hit the undo button and I just rewind and forget that the rest of Mr. Robot ever happened.
Find out that the real villain's Big Pharma.
Okay, so Angela rewinds the collapse of an E-Corp building over and over again. And we think she's, like, looking at it thinking, oh, my God, what have I done? But Darlene asks her what she's doing, and Angela says these people are going to be fine and demonstrates it by rewinding the recording to show that the people came back.
Roughly a billion times.
Oh, fuck.
You thought this scene was good?
Yeah. I mean, she's lost her damn mind,
I thought this
clearly.
Scene would break you, because I found it excruciating, and you're usually, like, I remember coming out of Sully, you're like, Jesus Christ, you could show us that scene 3 times, huh? Like, how many times does she have to rewind this fucking building before we, like, it was at least a dozen times, right?
Over that course of that scene, half a dozen.
Oh, man, I thought she did it 3 times with Angela alone.
Right, but the point is, we're thinking one thing. We're thinking she's looking at this, going, "What have I wrought?" But in actuality, she's trying to justify to herself that it's going to be okay because these people come back in the most psychotic way possible.
The thing is, I think I would have found this. I found it off-putting that she takes this childlike affect to do this. I felt like it would have been a lot more actually scary if she just seemed like a rational person. Because in my mind,
she has been that up until now, though. And
people that are bought into cults are indistinguishable from normal people until they start opening their mouths. They're not going to have this wild-eyed, like, you know, oh, this is pretty.
Right,
like,
but what if the most traumatic thing you can imagine happens to them? What does that turn them into?
Yeah.
It might turn them into this. I don't know. This is certainly a depiction of it.
Yeah. I guess you're right. It's a purely subjective opinion. It's just disappointing because I've really liked... I think Angela is one of the best, most complex characters on the show. And she's also, like, her less is more acting approach has, I think, maybe allowed me to paint a lot of my own depth onto her. And now that it's, like, regressed to this... Like, I feel like they're intentionally suggesting that she's regressed back to her little child self. It's just annoying.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's, like, intentionally so it makes me not like it, but whatever.
Okay. Mr. Robot goes to confront Irving at his car shop, where he's knocked out by the Dark Army.
Irving gets his hands dirty. I would not have called that.
I feel like this is all a show. Like, Irving, this is the one time he's been in the shop in 5 years, and he twisted a wrench just for the dramatic effect.
But that's even dumber than the reality, which is that he comes to work with an immaculate jumpsuit that he never gets dirty as he's wrenching on cars.
And hairstyle, yeah.
Yeah,
because
he
gets mussed.
I mean, that's the thing where it's, like, hard to say some of this artificiality on the show, what's intentional and, like, we're supposed to be getting, and, like, it's telling a story on another layer, and what's just maybe uneven execution, because this is the point in the season where Sam Esmail is suffering from exhaustion because he's doing everything. And he's just like, fuck it, put him in the jumpsuit and make sure his hands are clean. and he's wearing his actual suit underneath it. This is literally like a 1930s fucking Broadway production of a garage. Go. But it was kind of cool. It was kind of cool.
Yeah. Didn't mind that scene at all.
Plus, there's the fact that these two dark army goons are just like chilling in his back office at all time here.
With the masks on, ready to go.
I wonder what the fat, like, slightly less successful used car sales guy thinks of that situation. Yo, boss, these guys, the masks.
Maybe he's one of them.
Yeah.
He could be one of them.
I would have loved to see them carting around oversized novelty, like world's greatest number one assassin.
If they
mugs.
Had hit him with one of those.
Like yeah, he's been giving in the talk to.
Right.
It's like, hey, I was right about the car I set you up with. I'm right about the mug. Am I right? Yeah, I'm right. That's how he goes.
All right, we go over to Zhang telling Philip that he didn't want to take down E-Corp.
This
all
is
along.
Public necrophilia. He's fucking Philip Price's corpse in public just he because is. He can, and no one can stop him.
Yep.
This is fucking power.
He just wanted to take down Philip the whole time, and Philip completely loses his shit and demands to know why Zhang came after him personally. And Zhang says it's because he had to ask him twice. And God damn it, BD Wong, fuck you. You are so good.
Yeah, and like
so fucking good.
Every question, every answer he gets to his increasingly impassioned question is more insulting than the last.
Yeah.
Because ultimately it's like to teach you a lesson, second, and the final is like, because you made me ask twice. Mm-hmm. I was offended that you even like got your back up against me.
Yeah.
And you were no, because there was like a four step reveal, right? First it was like
Angela.
He says, well, no, it's like, well, E-Corp's going to be fine. And then Philip's like, but I'm not. And he's like, well, that's because you fucked me on the Angela thing. Mm-hmm. And then it was a teach a lesson and had his ass twice. I just thought it was great.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic.
Is Philip, are we ever going to see Philip again outside this season? I mean, it seems like
so.
E-Corp is going to continually be like the facade of the villain.
Oh, outside of this season. No, I don't think. Outside of this season. I think Philip
will have a new CEO.
Play his final hand pretty soon.
They're not going to make Tyrell the CEO of E-Corp, are they?
I've seen that theory floating around.
I don't like that theory at all. Probably because I fucking hate Tyrell.
So the only piece of evidence that has going for it is the distancing of Tyrell. Like the cleaning of Tyrell's image.
Right.
Which...
Right.
Man, it would take a lot of cleaning.
To be the CEO of the biggest...
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. It just seems, but I'm worried that they're going that way. What I'd like to see them is bring on an entirely new person.
Angela?
I don't know. No,
she's
no,
gone.
No.
She's gone too far off the deep end at this point.
Plus,
but...
like, what would that, like, I'm thinking, like, what would that headline look like on Forbes? Mm-hmm. Like, I think the editors would be like, look, White Rose, we love you. We don't want to die. But damn. This woman who was an account manager for a fairly large security is now the CEO of the most powerful company in the world.
There is no amount of sugar that will coat
that's
that
right.
semen.
That's right. That's just semen, man. Yeah. That's you put some fucking the sweet and low in there and trying to call it sugar. It's not going to work. It's not going to play.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I have no idea who the replacement would be.
Just bring in an outsider who we don't know his motivations and qualifications and someone who's like, we don't have an opinion on. Like,
kind of like
the
they did
needs.
With Scott Knowles as the CTO afterward, after Tyrell.
Or Dom. Like, bring in someone that just doesn't have a connection that we can have another great character, Irving, like somebody that just...
Santiago. He's going from the FBI to the head of E-Corp.
Yeah. Comey. Comey. All Comey right. got name checked. Just get James, just 6'8" James Comey in there.
Yep.
Fuck it. I don't care. I am super worried about who they're going to put there and if it's going to be a dumb tot dab off the scales kind of decision.
Yeah.
Donald Trump. Trump will CEO E-Corp.
No, get out of here.
And he'll actually play himself. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got time for that. I mean...
He's going to cut back on golfing a little bit.
He can just show up at his own club.
He's going to
film his scenes.
That's right. That's actually Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
He's going to kick off a little early from golf and film some scenes. It'll work out fine.
It'll be great. It's going to be the best scenes you've ever seen.
Big league. It'll be big league.
So he tells him the E-coin is going to survive. So a lot of people were speculating, oh, China's going to, attack E-Corp, and they're going to get the whole E-Coin thing shut down, and Bitcoin's going to be the only surviving thing, and they're going to have this quantum computer where they can mine it all instantly. I guess that rule, that idea still applies to E-Coin with the mining. I'm not sure, because we don't know like the details about the cryptocurrency there.
Mm-hmm.
But I assume that someone other than E-Coin could mine it, or someone other than E-Corp could mine the E-Coin. Or are they just in full control of it?
They have to, because that's the whole power of the crypto. I mean, right. That's, but I don't know.
So,
that,
so the quantum computer could still be in play here.
That could be just a giant tot dab then. Like, I know that if one central agency does the crypto and like just doles it out to people, that that's not what a cryptocurrency works like, and it's the opposite of one. But does Sam Esmail understand that?
I mean, his advisors have got to.
That's true, because that's like I don't think he's got economic and social advisors, but he's got technical advisors.
Absolutely, yeah.
And they would be like probably offended if you tried to pass a cryptocurrency as that.
Yeah, so I guess this is a switcheroo in that it won't necessarily be Bitcoin. It might be E-Coin. That White Rose wants to use the supercomputer that she's supposedly building.
I still don't like that theory very much.
I'm with you. It's not really.
At this point, if Esmail says they were just telling Angela a story to control her, there is no time travel or any kind of quantum. Would you feel a little cheated? Or would you?
I don't think so, because in this scene, White Rose essentially admits to manipulating Angela, and that throws into question this idea that the young Angela he showed Angela was actually Angela.
Right.
It might have been a girl who was meant to be this sort of doppelganger.
She looked exactly like Angela.
She does, but
from the flashback,
I think it's the same actress. We know that.
Yes,
that played both young Angela in the flashback and also.
Yes.
The Angela that Angela saw.
Uh-huh.
So, but they're credited differently. One is credited young Angela, one is credited girl. So is it possible the White Rose
It's possible.
Could get a picture? I mean, we know there are pictures that exist.
It's certainly possible. And Sam Esmail could also say, like, well, Angela's flashing, because who was flashing back last week? It was Angela, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, Angela flashing back was influenced by her experience with White Rose. Like, you could say that with a straight face. Whether your audience buys it and believes it and feels like that. I feel like at this point, yes, I feel like that he has given us enough cautions and warnings and brushbacks from the show itself, this White Rose speech being the latest one, that we can't feel cheated if we don't get fucking Marty McFly and Doc Brown next season.
Sure. And to me, manipulate is a weird word to use if you just actually showed someone something that's true.
Right.
That is a sort of manipulation, but it's not how I would describe it.
It could also be true. Like, White Rose could show her the fact that she could, like, there could be some limited way, like, that White Rose could benefit, but, like, the fact that White Rose having this technology is not the same as Angela having the technology. Like, this is the hope of the technology, but you're not going to get it.
Right.
It's like, you can live forever. Good news, it just costs $10 billion. There will be hundreds of people on this planet thrilled.
Yeah.
There'll be billions like, what the fuck? And like, I wonder if Angela's going to be those billions that are like, yeah, the promise of technology is awesome, but you're never going to taste it.
Yeah. And she was
there's a lot process. Of different ways that this could be true, but like not from a very certain point of view kind of way. Want to take a moment right now to talk about our sponsor for today, Sonos. Sonos is a wireless home sound system that fills as many rooms as you want with great sounding music, movies, and TV. The thing that's awesome about Sonos is that everything is Wi-Fi based, not Bluetooth. So you can literally fill your house with these speakers and connect them up into different room groups. Mm-hmm. And like yesterday, perfect example, I was using my Sonos system to flood the downstairs. Well, not flood. To tastefully put ambient dinner music behind my entire first floor for my Thanksgiving dinner party.
Decorate with sound.
Do you think it enhanced the experience?
Absolutely.
Having this like just charming adult contemporary.
I mean, if nothing else, it covered up the bathroom sounds when you went to relieve yourself of the turkey bomb.
True. That tryptophan also laxative. People don't. They talk about the naps, but they don't talk about the poops. Sonos is really hyped about their new one speaker system, which takes all that impressive platform that they've built, fill in your house with this awesome sound, and they add voice activation.
Maybe the most important feature.
courtesy Amazon Alexa, because now you can tell it to just play particular playlists or add things to your Amazon wish list or what the time or temperature. There's so many cool things you can do. And I used to give examples of what you could say, hey, Alexa for, but I got lots of responses that was triggering.
You just said it.
I know I did. And yesterday, like, we were watching the Macy's Day Thanksgiving parade thing, and Nick Offerman and Amy Poehler had this recurring series where they were doing stuff and was activating all my voice activated stuff, and I get it. I don't know how moving forward in the future we're going to talk about this awesome voice activated stuff without activating the awesome voice activated stuff.
Yeah.
But it's cool.
It's super cool. It's easily my favorite feature on this whole
your
thing.
Your hands are hip deep in a turkey, because turkeys have hips. You can say, hey, you, the name of the service.
Substituting a name, yep.
And, like, turn up the volume or skip to a different playlist or how long do I have to cook this turkey per pound? So insanely useful. You don't even know, like, you're looking...
Or where do I go for third degree burns?
Right. It's been a ritual of mine, like, for the past couple of weeks, like, as I'm walking out the door and collecting my wallet and watch, to ask it, like, what the weather is today.
Uh-huh.
And it gives me a nice little weather report. It's super, super cool, and kind of, especially with it being connected to your speaker system, your TV, kind of subtly life-changing. It's awesome. Our listeners can get a deal. Because Sonos loves us and by extension you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, if you are listening to 2-Bit Encryption, and I know you are, you can get 10% off one order of $2,500 or less for any product on Sonos.com. Its offer is available for a limited time only, so you got to act soon. And cannot be combined with other discounts or promotions. You go use the promo code ROBOT10, that's capital ROBOT10, at Sonos.com, and you can get the offer.
This podcast is also sponsored, as always, by Bald Move, primarily through a club, club.baldmove.com. If you go there, you can see a pitch combined with links to examples of said extra features you can get by supporting our club. Plus, you get to continue enjoying our Mr. Robot podcast, because, I mean, that's the club extra features of the sizzle. The steak are the podcasts that we make week in and week out. And the only reason we have time to do the quantities of podcasts that we do is because we're getting paid to do this full time. Primarily, we get paid through the club. Sonos helps out and the rest, but we're primarily listener based. And what's cool about that is we're not really beholden to any, like, to stay on a Mr. Robot message. We're not beholden to any fucking corporations to tell us what to feel about a particular product. So I can go on insane rants about Tyrell's constipated face. And Jim can think that a grown woman pretending to be a 5-year-old is cool, and no one can tell us otherwise, because it's the listeners letting us do this. So I guess it's a double-edged sword. If you like what we're doing, you should probably go to club. If you hate, you should definitely. If you hate, this podcast.
If you hate, you should go sign up twice.
If you feel like this is the podcasting equivalent of two men dealing with constipation, absolutely don't go to club.baldmove.com.
Yep.
Absolutely do not. But if you like it, if you're entertained in the way that Angela is endlessly entertained by rewinding and fast-forwarding through the same 5 seconds of disaster footage, you should absolutely go to club.baldmove.com, because you're missing out on extra cool. You're missing out on, like, what if you told Angela there was another 7 seconds at the beginning of that loop where the people were super happy rainbows literally shooting at, like, that
roof party happy.
She's just rewinding where the building stopped falling down. Like, if she kept rewinding, there was rainbows shooting out of asses and she missed all that. Come get your rainbow filled asses, or your asses filled with rainbows, alternatively, at club.baldmove.com.
Do we want to talk about plane crashes now or at the end of the episode?
Why would we touch about it now? Talk about
it now? I had to go look this up because I didn't remember this, but Philip was installed as the CEO of E-Corp after the predecessor was killed in a plane crash.
Oh. Right.
So, I mean, you have to guess that White Rose had a hand in that.
Yes.
Certainly, because she basically says it here.
Yeah. And she also, in that umbrella scene from 2 seasons ago, said that it was pretty implied there that she had pulled that string.
Right. So a lot of people were speculating about the plane crash with Darlene, and I want to talk about it as it relates to Frederick and Tanya at the end.
Uh-huh.
But there's a little bit of that here, too, as well.
Yeah. It's, Yeah, I mean, so, like, I think what's interesting about the plane attack is that something that we've been... Well, a plane attack is not something... Something about plane crashes has been teased for a long time in the show. Like, going back in even mid-last season, if you look at all of the plane imagery around Darlene specifically and her looking up flights to Singapore or Bali or wherever they were going to go earlier this season, that I almost think it would be impressive if Sam Esmail used those to misdirect to White Rose's false flag operation that never even happened.
I think that's
happen.
Absolutely what's happening here.
Because, like, here's the thing. Why the fuck would the Dark... Why would the Dark Army attack using the same plan that they just deliberately gave to the FBI?
Right.
It makes no sense.
This is a misdirection. Yeah. And I fully expect for something else to happen while the FBI and while all the law enforcement is looking at the planes.
And also, like, in retrospect, that comments that came out last week about Sam Esmail saying, oh, there's fans that have already guessed certain key elements of the plot. Like, how did he keep from laughing if he was referring to them ferreting out the false flag?
Oh, that'd be great.
Because that's so fucking perfect. Because now the informed, highly engaged viewers on Reddit now feel like the FBI. They just got the wool. They just got the wool pulled out from under them. You thought you were at the end of the investigation. It's just begun, motherfucker. Now, could be that there's something else that he's going to talk about. But I kind of hope it's this, because that makes him look like a fucking genius.
Yeah, no, that feels right to me. But, you know, I never quite got the plane crash stuff that they were talking about.
Well, here's also the other thing is it could both be true, because while it's true that the Dark Army wouldn't do a wide-scale attack, they had to clean up one loose end, one plane crashing out of the sky, you know.
Yeah.
That's going to take a couple months and years of investigation to figure out. It turns out it was like some kind of fucking hydraulic problem. But, you know, 100 flights dropping out, that's... So they could still off Darlene if they had to.
Yeah.
Or Darlene could die in a plane crash that's totally unrelated to anything, which would be another kind of awesome thing they could do.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. How often do planes crash? Not that often.
I mean, but they do
chances,
crash.
The
they
odds of
crash.
That are astronomical.
Talk about
Todd Dabb.
But it does happen. It does happen.
Yeah, it does. Okay, let's move on to Frederick and Tanya finish digging the grave as they wonder what the Dark Army wants from them. And Leon won't tell him.
I like how he reveals that he's like, I can hear everything you say, and even though it's the desert, yo, sound
from
travels.
All the way over here. Yep. That's a pretty funny scene. And
they're funny in a George and Elaine kind of way.
Yep.
Which, I mean, that's the thing. Like, all this shit is so much darker the second time when you know they're dead.
Yeah.
And probably Leon knows, too. Like, he's treating them like cattle. And how cynical the whole, like, I'm going to cross my fingers for y'all that this guy treats you right. Like, Jesus, Leon.
All right, Irving takes Mr. Robot to a cleanup job where he points out the fancy and powerful people partying on a rooftop and says everything is controlled by people like that. And there's nothing you can do about it.
I don't like this message of the show much.
Do you think they're setting up this message so that Mr. Robot / Elliot can fight back against it and ultimately prevail? So that they can disprove that thesis?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. This is kind of like a Todd Dabb problem I have with this. Like, I don't think there is a class of people, like, you know, that just pulls the strings like White Rose and Philip Price in the real world. And, like, I sometimes feel like this is kind of harmful because it encourages apathy. Unless you're going to, like, take up arms or start hacking the federal government, there's nothing you can fucking do because nothing really matters. And
I mean, my general feeling on it is you can hit the reset button on a system like that, but ultimately the system will reestablish itself. Like,
I mean, that's absolutely true.
I think that's what... I mean, that was my personal viewpoint coming in, so I think that's what he's saying,
That's the thing, is like, Because what it seems to me, like, what happens in human society, because I think that's right, but, like, we're ascribing an intent to a system that has no intention. What I really think civilization behaves is like a schizophrenic, that, like, they fucking, everything's going great, and they're in this manic phase, and they're making money, and everything's going wild, and then you get a Great Depression, and everybody wakes up and, like, holy shit, we should totally fucking take our medicine. and you take your medicine for 30, 40 years, mm-hmm. and then it's like, you know what? I feel great. Why do I need – why did I even start taking this medicine? It's crazy. And you stop taking your medicine.
Yeah.
You have another manic episode. Like, this fucking – seems like it keeps happening in civilizations every 30, 40 years. And I feel like that's the thing. It's not like someone manipulating the levers. It's just people, society just decides like all that shit that we put into place so that a bad thing that happened can't happen again. Man, it's kind of getting our way, right? Why do we even do that? It's so stupid. Let's woo! And I don't know.
It in a lot of ways feels like the relationship that Mr. Robot and Elliot have.
Well, and that's
like this cyclical like... I mean, Elliot's gone off and on his medication over and over again.
And I wonder,
you know?
That's the thing. Like, I do think Sam Esmail is smart enough to be making that point.
Yeah.
Like, because, like, he has espoused several different mutually contradictive, cynical worldviews in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Elliot's got one. Mr. Robot's got one. Darlene's got another.
Yep.
Zhang, White Rose, and Price has got another. Like, fucking Irving gives us one here.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe like that's part of the thesis is he's putting all these things on the table and he still hasn't gotten to the society as like someone who can't stay on their mental medication one yet. But
right. And when I'm watching a television show, I never try and look at what they're saying and say, this is what the show wants me to think.
Right.
I say, this is an idea that the show is presenting me with. What is it going to say about it? And I don't feel like we're at the point yet where Mr. Robot, the TV show, has said anything too specific. It's still in the introducing concept phase.
So isn't that weird almost like in the tail end of the third season that we can't say that like what is the definitive kind of statement the show is making? Or
I feel like as long as Elliot has this clash of personalities, we're going to be stuck in that loop.
Huh.
And maybe we come to some equilibrium at the end and we have an actual message from the show, but
I really hope
I
really hope this isn't an X-Files situation.
Yeah.
Where we're going to keep unpeeling shadowy layers of the onion until we get to the middle and it's still an onion.
And then they replace Christian Slater and Rami Malek with
I
don't know, the guy from Millennium and somebody else.
Yeah, we should who would be a close but no cigar kind of casting choice?
I don't think there's anybody close to Rami.
And that's what I'm saying. He's a pretty specific guy.
Yeah.
You just go for the bigger the eyes, the better, I guess. But
yeah.
Unless you're gonna
just
cast a lemur, a lemur, put him in there,
replace him with Hakune Mitsu or something.
Who's that?
I think that's the singer, right? The digital anime singer.
Yeah, you shave off her blue hair,
right?
And give her a kind of high top fade, and you got it.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to Leon taking Frederick and Tanya, Mobley and Trenton to a house where he leaves them with the DA, Dark Army, and he invites them to the garage.
Very polite.
For some unknown purpose.
Very polite.
Then we kind of cut away. We see two people eating. And they see Frederick and Tanya ID'd as the F Society leaders, and one of the guys works with him, and he decides to report him. Finally, Mobley and Trenton are led to the garage, where they're shown plans for a future terrorist attack involving planes. And the FBI is also seen closing in on that same garage, and the Dark Army forces Mobley and Trenton to shoot themselves in the head just hours before the FBI finds them dead in the garage. Dom goes to her big board of connections and crosses out Mobley and Trenton, then inserts a paper with White Rose written on it and says,
?
You're actually going to get away with it.
Yeah.
Very dismayed.
Yeah, like when Santiago comes over and says, gives her the speech about it's over, see, we prevent another attack, and she
claps her on the back.
Yeah, I wonder, this
fucking
can't,
douche.
You know, that's one of the theories we had last year is that maybe Dom joins with Elliot because she realizes that this shit goes to the top. And the only, I'm really excited for that possibility.
I'm too, man.
She can bring Mustache McGee with her, too, if she wants.
It's such a scary battle, between White Rose and Elliot and whoever has
on
his side.
That's a problem, is, struggling to understand how any collection of people, if the combined might of the United States government and China and this Dark Army group who could possibly control time and space are looking for you. It's like trying to hide from Doctor Who. How the fuck are you going to do it, man? The only thing that would almost be plausible is if they get to something at the end of the season where not only has Dark Army won, but they've won in such a way that Elliot and Darlene and Angela and the rest are not even a threat.
Yeah.
Like they're just discarded as garbage, so like Dark Army's not looking for them. I don't know why they wouldn't just kill them and put them in a, you know, like if they're to that level, like why wouldn't you just kill them and throw them in a garbage dump?
Right, they're definitely not afraid to kill.
So it's like I don't know how they're going to either power up Elliot and his team or somehow plausibly depower. Like maybe Philip Price has some kind of like, you know, dead man switch. Well, right. Speaking of dead man switch, there is that thing.
We
glossed over that. Like, who is that email going to be sent to?
Someone that Trenton trusts.
How did her and Dom have dialogue in season two?
I can't remember.
I can't recall if they had one-on-one, but by reputation, her being the agent assigned and her talking to the one guy's mom, like that might be something. I wonder if it, because there again, I guess my preference is her to send someone that we've never met yet, because I'm always like, want to see cool new characters on Mr. Robot. This is the one show that doesn't feel like they suffer from too many characters. And we just killed off almost the entire F Society and haven't really recovered from that. We killed off half of the Tyrell intrigue. Philip Price looks like he's on the way to go. So I wouldn't mind if there's like some, I don't know, like maybe there's some kind of crazy underground Iranian revolutionary group that could put some muscle behind Elliot. That, because that's what he needs, right? He needs some muscle and some
needs some protection, but
yeah,
how do you protect yourself from White Rose?
I'm
doing some mental gymnastics here to try and figure out a way that Dom could become the head or move in on Santiago's position, because if she were Santiago, this investigation would still be on.
But the problem
and White
is,
Rose might be in trouble.
Powers above Santiago are on the dole too.
Absolutely.
So like, I feel like she would have to get. I mean, it seems like the president and Comey,
but
like,
you'd have to,
maybe are not on the dole.
I mean, you'd have to find a reasonable excuse to fire Dom at that point, right?
Because
what's the public going to say if you go in and you fire the director of the FBI? Because they were pursuing leads on terrorists.
I don't know.
I mean, you'd have to find a plausible reason. I'm sure they can manufacture something, obviously, but...
Yeah.
I just can't see a way that, like, a Tyrell burned Santiago, but does that work? That doesn't seem like it works.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man.
Yeah.
But they need something like that to fight White Rose, because I don't know that Elliot has the lead hacker skills to do it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, Philip Price might be able to pull some kind of switch that cripples Dark Army in the short term that would give Elliot some space to breathe, or Elliot can make a new connection and friend that is more powerful than we. You know, because the world can always get bigger, right?
Well, I don't think we've seen the last of Philip's thrashing.
Yeah.
I think Philip is going to thrash on his way out, and that might involve taking down eCoin as a currency.
Ooh.
I don't know. Just out of spite.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because...
No, I can totally get that. And, like, this is the rare instance of White Rose or underestimating someone.
Yeah. Could be. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, that email is interesting, and the way she talks about it, you know, she discovered something that could let them undo the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
What she's talking about exactly, we think it's the 5-9 hack, because, you know, they were involved in that. I don't think it's the same undo that Angela's talking about.
Right.
Because Angela seems to think that people will be able to come back from the dead.
Or, like, this can all be undone literally. Like, you roll back time to a point.
Right.
Where, but that's always the interesting question. If you had that theoretical undo, is where do you roll back human history to a point where everything's good?
Because
someone's always about to die of cancer or skid off a bridge or flip off in the overpass or, you know, step off in front of a bus. Like, you know, what, dude, you selfish bastard. If you rewound it 5 more seconds, my husband would still be alive.
Right.
But then you roll back too far, and now I'm not born, you son of a bitch. Like, it's. I hope this show explores all that stuff, because I love that timey-wimey bullshit.
Yeah, if it goes there, we'll see. This all seems too convenient to me, and Dom's right on about it.
Oh yeah,
like this F Society mask hanging on a camcorder with the like Iranian flag.
It's so like it's so conspiracy theory fodder. Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see where this goes.
Yeah.
I thought overall pretty good episode. I know you had some quibbles. Do you still enjoy it?
No, yeah. I liked the episode, and I feel like again I was annoyed by the middle, but okay. The episode began strong and moved the show in a positive direction.
Cool. All right, maybe we should get to some feedback.
Yeah. First up, send it to robot@baldmove.com. Cherie from London says, in the final scene where Elliot said that he's a single point of failure, it got me thinking that his statement could explain why White Rose has kept Elliot alive all this time. Elliot is a chaos monkey for White Rose. Do you know what a chaos monkey is?
I have a guess based on the language, but is there
The chaos monkey is a service that identifies groups of servers and randomly terminates one of the servers in a group. It was developed by Netflix and has since been open sourced. To help companies learn to create the best plans to deal with failures, especially in a distributed computer environment.
It's a piece of testing software.
Yeah, like it just goes and essentially throws a monkey wrench in a part of your system, and then you see how scalable or how, you know, like how to mitigate that. Mm-hmm. Cherie then continues, stage two is to destroy the entire system. Its failure is when the paper documents are protected. Elliot has become the best person to protect the paper files, hence a good chaos monkey. The Dark Army then learns all the protective scenarios so they can develop the best destructive plan for stage two. I wonder, is that a plausible interpretation for why the Dark Army is currently valuing Elliot? Because he was someone they could monitor and was working against them and was able to kind of play both sides of the chessboard and gave them the optimal solution. I kind of like it.
Yeah, I mean, it, I guess, could be a convenient answer to that question because my big question is still, why does the Dark Army need Elliot?
It is a convenient answer. It feels a little bit unsatisfying. If, like, essentially he's like some kind of million monkey kind of piece of software, like, the way White Rose talks about him is that he's much more central and important. Stretching back, you know, at least a generation, his family's importance of their project. And that's the other thing I don't understand is Zhang was acting like Angela wasn't that big a deal. Like, it was more like that Philip annoyed him because he didn't control her. If that's true, and that's not just some cold smack to say to Philip, then that means that have really been off the mark as far as tying together Elliot and his father's importance with Angela and her mother's importance. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. My gut is that Zhang is just saying a bunch of cold-blooded shit there. None of that stuff is as important as the stuff he says to, like, his advisor and, you know, in like, less guarded moments, I guess.
Yeah, it could be. And my mind always turns to the question of how much White Rose knows about Elliot's split personality.
I think she knows a lot. She's probably the cause of it.
Well,
I mean, no hard facts on that. Yeah, that's just my gut.
She always interacts with him as if, well, I don't know, because Tyrell didn't know and Angela and Tyrell didn't seem to want to tell the Dark Army.
Yeah.
That would imply that they don't already know.
Yeah.
And
well, it could be Irving doesn't know because White
that could
Rose
be the blind spot, right? Yeah. Like, is that
I just
she
think
doesn't
that
know
a character with two very distinct ways they present themselves. Mm-hmm. Doesn't know and has a fascination with another character that does the same. Like, I mean, it's possible, but thematically and narratively, it seems like it's more interesting for this character to knows everything to know that.
Yeah.
And who she reveals it to is important as well. Mm-hmm. So, like, I can't take it on a matter, like an article of faith that White Rose doesn't tell bullshit to her assistant. Why would she?
Yeah.
Like, so when she says that Elliot is super important, just like his father, and just like his father, we can dispose of him when we're done. Like, I feel like all those things are true. Mm-hmm. Whereas, there's lots of reasons she'd lie and dissemble to Philip.
Sure. Yeah,
just extra
would.
Hurt his feelings is about. So, like, there's, like, I don't take a lot of stake in like, what he was saying in this episode. But I do like I said, like, it's not, the only thing I don't like about Sherry's theory is that it is somewhat unsatisfying into, like, his almost messianic importance to this movement. Jason M. from Iowa. Do you guys think that Elliot, Angela, and Chang are all channeling dead relatives? Seems Elliot has his father, Angela has her mother, and Zhang his sister, White Rose. Maybe I missed something, but I thought when Zhang was showing off his clothes to Dom, he mentioned that they were his sisters. Does this mean the three dead ones were the pioneer explorers or something and traveling to another dimension? Do you... So, I think we talked about this last season. Do you remember that scene where Zhang was showing off his the fancy clothes to
I remember Dom? The scene. I don't remember all the dialogue.
And he said it was like, oh, my sisters. Like, I guess... And this is probably maddening if you're on the other side of the fence, but I always took that as her just making an excuse for why she has women's clothes in her... And also drawing Dom out, because Dom had that kind of, like...
Right, I think it was feeling out the waters there.
But
know?
She was like, kind of in the closet for various reasons, and so it was kind of like a wink-wink, my sister.
Right, yeah.
But some people thought, like, I remember that debate of, like, it might be that he has a literal sister, and so it could be, and I get it that, like, you're like, how the fuck can you sit there behind that microphone and say that... It's too big a coincidence for you that a person who has a dual persona would not know about another's dual persona and then say, I don't like this theory that the person with dual persona is a dead relative, even though I love it with the two other characters.
Yeah.
But hey, man.
I mean,
I'm a hypocrite, just like every other human.
There's just a feeling you get from scenes, right, when you watch them. And the way the body language people use and the way they say things that gives you an impression of what they mean. And
that's one of the things about
in that scene, I did not get the impression that she meant a literal sister.
Right, right. And that's one of the things that's so cool about this tool set that he's got to play with is, like, there's all this duality, and he can use it for different things in different scenes.
Sure.
And to appeal to different characters. And, like, there might be a dual aspect to all of these characters, but that doesn't mean they're literally all the same. And so, like, that's one of the things that's kind of neat about it is that this is such a flexible way to tell a story. And it's also, it's kind of like, you know, with fucking Game of Thrones glamours. Once you introduce the ability for someone to have this psychic shift, it's like anyone could then do that thing.
Right. It presents opportunities and it also presents... traps.
It presents traps for writers to fall into.
Right, because there is a fine line for me.
And audiences. Like, the audiences sometimes build these traps themselves and fall into them, like thinking something
is
way crazier, which they eventually define as cooler and right, then...
But if you don't tweak those knobs in just the right way, I end up feeling like I've been bamboozled and swindled.
Exactly.
And I come out with a negative reaction.
And the hell of it is that trip line is different for every person,
absolutely,
too.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you just try to hit the bell curve as much as you can.
The audience for this show needs to drop to one, me.
Right.
And then they can make the perfect show.
You just have to figure out how to foot the bill, and you'll be okay.
Give Bald Move, like, 30 more years. Maybe I'll be there.
Shane Bowman, our old buddy, gives us a heads up. He said, there's a great interview with Sam Esmail and KCRW's The Treatment today. Some fantastic insight inside baseball in this one. My favorite is the bit where Sam talks about editing out blinks. Talk about attention to detail. Now, I haven't got a chance to hear this yet because it's been Thanksgiving.
Has Rami Malek blinked once this series?
Probably, but it's been digitally removed. Yep. What's funny is, like, we had this idea of making cuts of movies where I think the original idea was remove all the blinks.
In Twilight specifically.
Yeah.
Says Kristen Stewart, Jesus.
Blinks uncontrollably throughout the whole thing. But then we eventually did develop this thing called silent movies, which became something we're trying to get off the ground now, where we remove all the dialogue from a movie and see if it still makes sense. But it tickled me that this guy is, like, editing out blinks to get a particular effect from scenes. And I can't wait to listen to the podcast. I'm going to link that in the show notes if you want to hear the KCRW's The Treatment with Sam Esmail. Rennie says, holy shit, has Sam got his shit together since last season? Every episode so far has been just so goddamn good. I'm putting this as a counterpart to my kind of minor league downing this episode. To me, this season's on par with The Leftovers Season 2. A tightly written and damn near perfectly executed story that throws a bunch of questions at you with every development, but keeps answering them at the same steady rate. Is that too high praise?
A little bit. I don't think the characters are near as good as the ones in Leftovers.
We haven't had our International Assassin episode yet, though. Like, if that... Yeah. Like, I could see saying that about Season 2 of The Leftovers at that point, too. Because we got, what, three episodes left?
I just don't think they have the same tools that Leftovers does when it comes to my personal feel for the show.
The Leftovers is going to eventually be my favorite show of all time, I think. I think that's one of the Baldi's topics I want to do, our January-based award show.
Every year we should do the favorite of all time.
Yeah, to see if it's updated or changed. Because it's been remarkably stable for like a decade for me.
Mm.
And I think The Leftovers upset the apple cart. So very high praise is what you're leveling at for me, Rennie. Mr. Robot's second season for me was such a misstep that I don't know it can ever like rest a top five spot, but who the hell knows?
Yeah.
We got two more seasons and three more episodes for this one.
Yeah.
If S-Mail nails the ending, this will probably be my favorite show from this year, even with the heavy competition it got. That, like I said, Leftovers season three, it's a lock for me.
I'll say this is not a bad choice so far.
I did not see this show getting into top five. It's definitely getting into top five. I can't imagine it not. And I could also see it. I could also see, because so far this year, I've said it's The Leftovers,
The Deuce,
and then there was
Stranger Things.
Stranger Things, mm-hmm. Yeah. Boy, that's a tough nut to crack. They had really.
But top five, yeah, for sure.
But I'm saying, like, with the right finale, maybe
top three.
Maybe it could do, especially if I flip Stranger Things in front of The Deuce, maybe it could climb in front of The Deuce.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's a great show. There's much depends on the Red Wheelbarrow's last three episodes.
It does, yeah.
And that's all the email we got.
Okay.
So holiday week, probably going to be record low podcast ratings for this episode, released on a Friday, the day after, the Black Friday after Thanksgiving.
It's fine.
But we do it. We shout into the void.
Yeah.
Stare into the abyss until the abyss starts listening.
We've made a promise to our listeners. We can't break it.
Right. And we're thankful for all of you. Mm-hmm. So send in your feedback for next week in robot@baldmove.com. We'll be back for the next week and the week after that and the week after that. Probably a wrap-up episode after that. We'll see how it goes. Until then, have a great Thanksgiving weekend for Americans and the rest of the world. Just
have a great Saturday and
have
Sunday.
Some virtual turkey on me. Yeah. We'll see you back next week. Bye.